Text 99. David Herbert Lawrence, The Rose Bush.
He followed her across the nibbled pasture in the dusk. There was a coolness in the wood, a scent of leaves, of honeysuckle, and a twilight. The two walked in silence. Night came wonderfully there, among the throng of dark tree trunks. He looked round, expectant. She wanted to show him a certain wild rosebush she had discovered. She knew it was wonderful, and yet, till he had seen it, she felt it had not come into her soul. Only he could make it her own, immortal. She was dissatisfied. Dew was already on the paths. In the old oak wood, a mist was rising, and he hesitated, wondering whether one whiteness were a strand of fog or only campion flowers pallid in a cloud. By the time they came to the pine trees, Miriam was getting very eager and very tense. Her bush might be gone. She might not be able to find it, and she wanted it so much. Almost passionately, she wanted to be with him when he stood before the flowers. They were going to have a communion together, something that thrilled her, something holy. He was walking beside her in silence. They were very near to each other. She trembled, and he listened, vaguely anxious. Coming to the edge of the wood, they saw the sky in front like mother of pearl, and the earth growing dark. Somewhere on the outermost branches of the pine wood, the honeysuckle was streaming scent. "Where?" he asked.
"Down the middle path," she murmured, quivering.
When they turned the corner of the path, she stood still. In the wide walk between the pines, gazing rather frightened, she could distinguish nothing for some moments. The greying light robbed things of their colour. Then she saw her bush. "Ah!" she cried, hastening forward. It was very still. The tree was tall and straggling. It had thrown its briars over a hawthorn bush, and its long streamers trailed thick right down to the grass, splashing the darkness everywhere with great spilt stars, pure white. In bosses of ivory and in large splashed stars, the roses gleamed on the darkness of foliage and stems and grass. Paul and Miriam stood close together, silent, and watched. Point after point, the steady roses shone out to them, seeming to kindle something in their souls. The dusk came like smoke around, and still did not put out the roses. Paul looked into Miriam's eyes. She was pale and expectant with wonder. Her lips were parted, and her dark eyes lay open to him. His look seemed to travel down into her. Her soul quivered. It was the communion she wanted. He turned aside as if pained. He turned to the bush. "They seem as if they walk like butterflies and shake themselves," he said. She looked at her roses. They were white, some incurved and holy, others expanded in an ecstasy. The tree was dark as a shadow. She lifted her hand impulsively to the flowers. She went forward and touched them in worship. "Let us go," he said. There was a cool scent of ivory roses, a white, virgin scent. Something made him feel anxious and imprisoned. The two walked in silence. "Till Sunday," he said quietly, and left her, and she walked home slowly, feeling her soul satisfied with the holiness of the night. He stumbled down the path, and as soon as he was out of the wood in the free open meadow where he could breathe, he started to run as fast as he could. It was like a delicious delirium in his veins. Always when he went with Miriam and it grew rather late, he knew his mother was fretting and getting angry about him, why he could not understand. As he went into the house, flinging down his cap, his mother looked up at the clock. She had been sitting, thinking, because the chill to her eyes prevented her reading. She could feel Paul being drawn away by this girl, and she did not care for Miriam. She is one of those who will want to suck a man's soul out till he has none of his own left, she said to herself. And he is just such a gaby as to let himself be absorbed. She will never let him become a man. She never will. So while he was away with Miriam, Mrs. Morell grew more and more worked up. She glanced at the clock and said coldly and rather tired, "You have been far enough tonight." His soul, warm and exposed from contact with the girl, shrank. "You must have been right home with her," his mother continued. He would not answer. Mrs. Morell, looking at him quickly, saw his hair was damp on his forehead with haste, saw him frowning in his heavy fashion, resentfully. "She must be wonderfully fascinating, that you can't get away from her, but must go trailing 8 miles at this time of night." He was hurt between the past glamour with Miriam and the knowledge that his mother fretted. He had meant not to say anything, to refuse to answer, but he could not harden his heart to ignore his mother. "I do like to talk to her," he answered irritably. "Is there nobody else to talk to?" "You wouldn't say anything if I went with Edgar." "You know I should. You know whoever you went with, I should say it was too far for you to go trailing late at night when you've been to Nottingham. Besides," her voice suddenly flashed into anger and contempt, "it is disgusting, bits of lads and girls courting."